Serial Entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Serial Entrepreneur podcast brought to you by Startups Magazine. As part of our special Championing Women in Tech and Women in Business series, today I am joined by the lovely Danielle Haig and Tanya Diggory. And our topic of conversation today is mental health and well-being, which is a conversation that needs to be had no matter what time it is, but especially during the times that we've just been through and the times that we've got ahead of us. So, ladies, Danielle, Tanya, thank you so much for being with me today and joining me. If you'd both like to kind of introduce yourselves a little bit and tell our audience about all the amazing work you do. Danny, shall we start with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for having me on today, Anna. An absolute pleasure. Yeah, so I am a business psychologist and I run a consultancy, a business psychology consultancy in the city. I'm also a trained therapist and business coach as well, and utilize all of those areas in my work. So I'm quite fortunate in that my work is really varied. I work with everything from huge corporates working in engineering, finance, consulting, construction, healthcare, helping them with essentially improving their workplaces to improve the motivation and enjoyment of their most valuable asset, which is their people. I also then work as a business coach, which is incredibly rewarding. So that working one-on-one or with smaller groups of people, working on very specific topics for those individuals to help them overcome whatever hurdles are getting in their way of their career progression. And a huge amount of all of that work, so whether it's consulting or coaching, is to do with mental health and well-being. You know, we all have a mental health the same way we have a physical health. And basically the work that I do really tries to highlight that and remove that taboo from society, really, from the workplace, so that we can all talk about it and therefore resolve any issues that people might have. So yeah, so that's a lot of the work that I do, lots of workshops, lots of talks, consulting, etc. And then obviously writing for Startup Magazine as well, which is always a delight.
Thank you. No, some of your pieces are online now, so people listening should definitely go check them out. They're really insightful. We look forward to them every month. Thank you, Danny. And Tanya, over to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here. It's so lovely to join you ladies today. And so my name is Tanya. I'm the founder and director of an award-winning training organisation called Karma. And we are set up to empower entrepreneurs, freelancers and business teams to nurture good mental health and well-being. So we do this through training courses, whether digital or in person. We also have digital products like our membership site, and we have lots of different webinars and one-to-one sessions that we run. So the big sort of heart behind our organization and why we exist is that, you know, we believe that mental health needs to be at the heart of every organization's priorities and strategies. So we do a lot of work around strategy development as well as through our training courses with senior leaders and staff. But, you know, from a personal experience in the past of being an entrepreneur since 2010, running a couple other different businesses as well, I've definitely been through my experience of going through high levels of stress, burnout, you know, struggling with my mental health, especially going through panic attacks on and off for about a year at one point until I recovered. And, you know, it's just, I think it's a case of managing our well-being and managing our mental health, no matter how well we think that we are doing. And, you know, even if we think that, you know, I'm a really positive person and proactive and, you know, I don't necessarily need to think about my mental health, you know, I used to be one of those people, and it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks out of nowhere, you know, when I was way too stressed and feeling burnt out. So, you know, like Danny said, we all have mental health, and it's something that we do need to monitor, to take care of and manage and nurture on a regular basis. And when you do that, you're taking care of, you know, your people who are, you know, the biggest asset in your companies. And for individuals as well, like entrepreneurs, freelancers, change makers, you know, people who are passionate about making change in the world. When you're in that space, you know, you can be so driven on passion and drive and, you know, just wanting to make a difference that you can forget about yourself and your health and how you're doing. So, yeah, we felt there was this need in the business world to have a platform that said, you know what, it's okay to struggle if you are, it's a human experience, and here's how you can help yourself. So alongside that, I do a lot of speaking work internationally as well as in the UK, and I'm an author and a writer, and also had the pleasure of writing for Startups Magazine. So it's lovely to be here. Thank you.
Definitely. Well, thank you, ladies. A million questions have already popped into my head, so I can tell it's going to be a good episode today. I thought it was both really interesting in your intros. You both said how, you know, mental health, there is still this kind of taboo around it, but we're getting better, and it's only over the last few years that we've done that. I guess the important thing is that we are continuing to educate people, because not everyone is at a level that they should be knowing about their mental health or doing something about their mental health. So I guess my first question to start things off is quite a big one, but how important is it that we look after our mental health, and what are the signs to look out for when looking after our mental health?
Well, yeah, that is a big question. I mean, to be honest, for Tanya and I could imagine, you know, our attitudes are pretty much the same, which is it's fundamental that we look after our mental health. It's one of the, to be honest, I mean, people are getting fitter, generally speaking. I think people are healthier. The idea of going to a gym is a very normal thing. People say, when we think of physical health, you know, people say, what gym do you go to? What do you do to work out? It's a normal thing to talk about. People don't sit around and pretend that they don't go to the gym. It's a very normal part of our lives. And yet we don't have the same attitude towards our mental health. And I think that if we put the same amount of stress onto that without it becoming a fad and actually just becoming a part of our culture and who we are, the same way we talk about going to the gym and looking after our physical selves, we talk about our mental health as well in that same respect. It's fundamental. It's our core. I always liken our self-esteem, our confidence, our resilience, etc., to our physical body, because it helps people understand how important it is. So I will always say, you know, it's like our core, it's our core muscles. We have to work on them every day to keep ourselves strong and robust. You know, we can control our minds the same way that we can control our muscles. You know, you can rehardwire the way that you think about things, because our brain is just like a muscle, the same as your biceps, for example. So by likening it, I think it opens up those kind of conversations, and also kind of makes people realize that, yeah, this is really important for us to work on these topics. I mean, it's everything. As practitioners, you know, Tanya, I'm sure you'll agree that it's the fundamental to, you know, creating a robust person, essentially.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what came to mind as you were talking about the muscle side of things, like strengthening our mental health is like strengthening a mental muscle. Absolutely. Just like with physical health, when you want to get physically fit and strong, like you say, you go to the gym. But we've got our heads around that for many, many years, haven't we? But it's the same kind of approach with our mental health. It takes time, it takes patience, it takes perseverance to strengthen our mental resilience. But it's just as important as the emphasis we place on our mental health. I mean, there's a term within neuroscience called the mind-body connection. And essentially what this means is that the mind really has the power to either heal or hinder the body. And essentially what we think affects how we feel and therefore how we behave. And it's like a catalyst effect. So really the mind and body are connected, our mental, our spiritual, our emotional health, our physical health. It's all interconnected because we are one entity, right? So it is absolutely, like Danny was saying, fundamental to our, you know, to our well-being. And well-being in itself has all these different facets. So, you know, how our mental health is and the state of it can have a catalyst effect when you look at it as a whole. And I don't know about you, Danny, but when you think of sort of signs and symptoms, I always look at it as, you know, everyone is different. So it's difficult to say exactly categorically, this is what you'd need to look out for. But of course, there are some typical signs and symptoms that you can be aware of. But I would always suggest that just going back to, you know, developing a sort of practice of deepening your sense of self-awareness is really important, so that you can understand what your sense of norm feels like when you feel kind of in balance and in flow. And therefore, you can start to sense signals that your body will send you in your moods and your emotions, physically, any tension, etc., when things aren't feeling so great. So typical signs that can come up could be, you know, like racing heart, can be constricted breathing, you can feel tension in your muscles, you can have a lot of wearing thoughts going through your mind that maybe affect your sleep. And then if you're not getting good sleep, then you feel, you know, pretty rubbish the next day, and that can affect your motivation, your emotional state, etc. But it is that understanding what your sense of norm is first and foremost, and going from there, because everyone has their own sense of norm. And then knowing and trying to listen to those signals that your body sends to you when things aren't feeling great, and really paying attention to that and giving yourself permission to actually listen and feel, you know, like, well, what do I need? And can I just take a bit of time out to assess, or maybe speak to someone, or just to understand kind of what I might need to help me come back into balance as soon as possible, as early on as you can, when you start recognizing those signals, the better, so that you can help yourself. Yeah, I'd love to know your thoughts on that too, Danny.
The thing is, we can't see our mental health, but what we do see is the manifestations of when something isn't quite right, when we're just off kilter a bit. And it's interesting how we're off kilter a bit within our mental health, but then that manifests itself in our physical health. And when you were saying about that mind-body connection, you know, it's so truly powerful. When I give workshops, I sometimes ask people to imagine, for example, the most amazing meal you've ever had in your life. Just think about it for a few minutes. Your stomach will start rumbling. You'll start salivating. Just by merely thinking about something, your body reacts to it. For example, imagine you're about to do a parachute jump. You can visualize it. Some people will be full of anxiety, others will be full of excitement, etc. But either way, the fact that the brain is so incredibly powerful and has this ability to show you almost, you know, something isn't quite right there. You know, maybe it could be something little. Like as Tanya said, if you know yourself when you're normal, suddenly, I don't know, you can't stop biting your nails, or you can't sleep, or, you know, you're a bit snappy, or something's going on. Even the tiniest things, it's almost like a signal that you need to take a stop, take a pause, and maybe just have a little think about what is going on at that moment. You know, do you need a bit of a timeout? Do you need a refresher? Whatever it is. But I think it's really interesting how actually our brain does give us these signals through our body almost. When we can't see what's going on inside, it does manifest itself physically.
Definitely. And talking now, I mean, I think I've educated myself more over the last few years, and, you know, working with people, amazing people like you two, has, you know, helped me learn more about mental health and stuff, because like you say, it is something that not everyone wants to talk about, and if you're not, you know, into it and willing to learn, then you won't. But I sometimes just get really moody and snappy, and people around me are like, what is wrong with you? There's obviously something in your life that you're stressed about. And I'm like, no, there isn't. And then that makes me even worse. But there's an underlying, a big project coming up at work, or, you know, you've got a big thing on at the weekend that you're worried about, and you just don't think about it, and your body, like you say, is telling you that you are stressed or you need something. And it's like, I didn't really understand how important sleep was, which I know sounds very stupid, but like, I was like, oh, as long as I get like 7 hours, I'll be fine. But I think I need more personally, and that can really affect you day to day, like not just being sleepy and tired, like your whole mood and your whole state.
It's not stupid at all to think that, because I think it's so you know, we're living in an age of information, and we've got more and more research that's coming out than ever before. And so there's all this wide-ranging research around sleep that we didn't actually have necessarily even a few years ago, you know. So I think all of us are actually learning so much more about the power behind your sleep and how that can affect your well-being, for sure. And I also just want to make a point that from what you said just then, there is also a fine balance between just having a bit of an off day. Like, I think it's important for us not to overanalyze ourselves too much, and that's where that kind of self-awareness and knowing what your balance comes in. You know, because we can just go through a period of time, a few days, or even a week, where we're just not really feeling ourselves, but then actually we kind of, you know, bounce back. Maybe we're kind of aware, but yeah, you know, and there's a difference between that and like a condition, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, Tanya. I think that it's recognizing patterns, I would say, like patterns of behavior, and learning to not be scared of emotions. I remember having a bit of a, you know, it's not like a revelation to psychologists, but when I was younger, I remember saying to my mum and sister, why are certain emotions considered bad when they're all just emotions? And I remember that really started a massive deep dive into understanding our emotions and resilience, which is a massive topic for me and something that I spend a lot of time researching and writing about. And I very much have the sense of, I'm not scared of any emotion. even if those emotions are bad, like say, for example, you're angry or you're feeling even jealousy or you're feeling down or whatever it is, but almost leaning into those emotions and starting to work out like, where is this actually coming from? And generally, if you have that awareness and you can start to see a pattern arising with your behaviors, you can just kind of, instead of being scared of it, be curious about it, lean into it and kind of unpick it a bit, because generally it will come from somewhere. These bad emotions that we feel, you know, we're constantly striving to be happy all the time, which is actually an impossibility. I always say we should be striving for contentedness, you know, feeling good on a day-to-day basis. There are ups and downs, but generally speaking, you're feeling pretty content. That is the goal for life, I think. But understanding that actually emotions, like our manifestations or whatever's going on, are just signals that we need to start questioning and being curious about something else that's going on with us. So I think that's a big thing about not being fearful, but being curious.
Definitely. And of course, you both work with a range of people and businesses, but you also work with entrepreneurs, small businesses, founders. Is it not more difficult? Obviously, everyone goes through mental health, but like for founders, is it something that they experience more of sometimes because they're putting themselves under more stress? You know, what is particularly important in founders to kind of remember and look out for?
I work with a lot of founders. In fact, I've worked in incubators. I have clients who are founders right now, individual coaching clients. And, you know, I've set up my own businesses myself. I think that I would say, and Tanya, you set up your own businesses and everything yourself, there's just an underlying current of anxiety, I would say, that sits with being a founder about absolutely everything under the sun, because everything sits on your shoulders. It is so extraordinary. And I sometimes think to myself, why the hell have I ever done this? Like, what did I do to myself to do this? But then again, at the same time, I can't imagine not living like this either. You know, I can't imagine not being a founder. I can't imagine not running a business and just thinking, oh my God, on a daily basis. And it's something that's very curious, because if you talk to people who have never run their own business or never been a startup, a founder or whatever, they have no comprehension of what it actually feels like. Tanya, I'm sure you know what it feels like when the whole world seems to be on your shoulders. You know, you're thinking about years ahead of things. You know, you're borrowing all of this stress from the future and the worries. I remember at the beginning of the year signing up all of my retainers, even for my business right now, feeling absolutely great. And I remember saying to my mum about it, who is also a business owner, and I was like, right, well, better get started on 2021 now. And she's like, what? You've literally owned just... And it's that's the thought process. You know, you're always thinking ahead, ahead, ahead. And of course, we never know what's actually happening, which I think COVID has shown us quite nicely, a big reminder that we never know what is around the corner, basically. And how everyone's felt about COVID, I think on a bigger scale, is kind of how people in startups feel, because you're just like, what now? Like, what have we got to overcome now? And you know, you can make all the plans in the world, but you never, you know, things never go quite as smoothly. So I would say that, yeah, there's a lot of anxiety around being in a startup, and you have to overcome a lot of stresses. You're holding on to the stress of running a business, being responsible for it, for your staff, you know, and also, Your startup is a manifestation of your creativity. You've turned something that's a thought into a reality. And there's a lot of pressure on that as well, because it's intrinsically connected to your self-esteem when it's a product of yourself. And I think that that can create a lot of issues as well with regards to wearing down at your resilience when you've got these stresses all around you. So, yeah, I would say that they're probably the main mental health and kind of stresses around being a startup owner, entrepreneur. What do you think, Tanya?
I love that phrase you just said about borrowing stress from the future. Never heard that before. And it makes total sense, because you have to think ahead. You do have to plan. You do have to strategize. But you can't know exactly what's going to happen, but you have to think of every eventuality. And some of those eventualities might seem quite stressful, because you have to take risks, and you have to take calculated risks as well, and be okay with whatever happens and plan for that. You know what I mean? And you hope the best scenario happens, but things are unpredictable, you know, like Danny said. And I think all of that just just highlights again the importance of strengthening your mental resilience as an entrepreneur, because it's one of the most fundamental skill sets that you need. And when you look at resilience and emotional intelligence, it's not like just some people have them as skills, you know, but it is that in itself. It is a skill to nurture and to develop, and everybody can develop those skills. So it's just tapping into that. But I really agree. I think there is this like underlying, you know, stress or anxiety that you have to manage as an entrepreneur, because not everybody wants to run a business. And I think that, you know, it wouldn't be good for the world for everyone to run a business. You need everybody for all different aspects of what makes a business function, you know. And, you know, in my first book, This Is Karma, one of the things I talk about is how you're wearing so many different business hats, you know, when you're starting up a company. And that's one of the biggest stresses I feel, because when you compare to having a single role as part of a company and you're solely reliant and responsible for that role, when you start up your own business, you're balancing the finances with the sales, with the marketing, with the strategy, with the planning, with the actual service delivery, with, you know, promotion, like all of this stuff. And until you can start to get a team together or have other people that can help, you're juggling a lot, and there's only so much time in a day. So I think there's a big navigation around all those things, and also just being strict with your time. One of the big things I talk about in my sessions is, you know, for entrepreneurs and freelancers especially, and this is something I learned as a big lesson, like the hard way for me, is create your business with your lifestyle in mind around it. You know, what lifestyle do you want to create around your business? Because I think a lot of entrepreneurs fall into, I wouldn't necessarily say a trap, but it can become like, it feels like a trap, where you just focus on everything to do with the business. What does the business need? What does the business want? What do I need to do for the business constantly? And then that's when it can start taking over your life and, you know, demanding your evenings and early wake ups and affecting your sleep, etc. Of course, there's a lot of responsibility on your shoulders. But if you start to look at it from the perspective of, what would an amazing life look like for me whilst running a business? What's my kind of cutoff time? What's my start time in the day? How many hours of sleep do I need a night to feel refreshed so that I can manage and be the best I can be for my business and for everyone I'm serving? What does balance look like to me? You know, what do I enjoy doing outside of my business? Because this is the thing, like when you actually take time for yourself, I believe it's a very selfless act. It's not selfish. And that's one thing that I hear a lot of entrepreneurs say, like, I feel guilty, I feel selfish if I'm taking time for myself because I need to do so many things. But actually, when you do that, you're not only being at your best for yourself, but you're being at your best for others around you and for the delivery of what you're doing. So you're restoring your energy levels, you're replenishing your energy levels. You know, so a life of balance is just absolutely fundamental if you're a business owner or not, to be honest. But in the context of what we're talking about here, that is essential to look at as early on as possible. But you can always start any time if you feel like things are out of balance. Just start looking, okay, well, what do I want my lifestyle to be around it?
Absolutely, Tanya. It's interesting you say that, because lots of people that I work with, it's about setting boundaries. And I think that's kind of part of what you're talking about. And I'll sit with clients and I'll be like, right, tell me what you do from the moment you wake up in the morning. Tell me your day. Like, let's plan a week out together. And you would be surprised at how people have so few boundaries in their lives. And this is where this work-life mesh of never being able to like take that work hat off and be a human, you know, be a partner, be a child, be a, you know, a chef, be a musician, be a cook, be whatever else it is. You know, you are more than just a business owner. And I think that we forget those boundaries so often. And it's kind of like you were saying, you know, it's indulgent to do something that you want. I remember when I first set up my business, I wouldn't even allow myself to read a book that wasn't related to my work. And then, like, I remember once sitting and being like, oh God, I've just read a few chapters of like a book I just enjoy, and just felt so guilty. And that's the kind of mentality that I think people have. So I think absolutely 100% right. I think that whole concept of putting boundaries around your time and owning your time is so important.
Absolutely, Zani. And, you know, to that point, it's amazing how many people respect boundaries. Like, we just need to give ourselves permission to put it in place.
I'm like, don't be scared to put boundaries. I was like, if you go up to a shop and the shop's closed, you're not like, open up the shop, I want to come in. You just say, oh, okay, I'll come back when it's open. And that's because they put a boundary in place. I'm always saying, just do the same with your time. People will respect it. People always, you know, take advantage. If you've got permeable boundaries, people will find their way in. You know, just, I'm so glad you said that. People always think, oh God, they won't come back, or people won't respond well.
But just on the point of, you know, what we're currently going through with COVID, it's interesting what I've noticed people have started to do, because I think they've got this like necessity of needing to work from home now, is I have noticed more people putting their out of office emails on and explaining to people what their expectations are, basically. Like, you know, please know I'm only checking my emails on these days each week because I'm, you know, balancing this, that and the other. And just putting that on their out of office, whenever I receive something like that, I'm like, preach. That's fantastic. You know, I'm so pleased to see that people are starting to take that into their own hands.
Exactly. And you read it and you think, okay, then that's how it is. So I'll wait for a response. And then you're done.
Like you said, you're not going to go knocking at their door and be like, no, you need to give me an answer now.
And adding to that point, obviously, the boundaries that you said and time, it's like people that go on holiday and are constantly checking your emails. What's your opinion on that? Are you too able to switch off when you go away? Or are you a bad culprit for that, you know, constantly checking your emails still? And
but you know, it's from experience that I've got to this place, because when I ran two different businesses before setting up Karma, and I retrained within NLP and as a mindfulness practitioner and a mental health trainer and first aider. So I'd kind of gone from running a dance school to an international dance events company, and it was a massive leap between the two. And especially with the events company, I was just working around the clock, and you know, I'd feel this necessity, and I'd set that expectation totally myself. No one had told me you need to be checking your emails all the time and you need to be working on weekends, and I was in that place, and it just led me down a dark hole, to be honest, and it took me a while to recover. And so I, you know, with Karma, I really try and practice everything that I share with everybody. We do not teach people to be perfect. I mean, that could be a whole conversation in itself. Perfectionism, personally, doesn't exist, right? It's just a myth. It's a theme, okay? And it's not necessarily healthy, because it could be like you're striving for happiness. You're striving for something that's in your ideal of perfect, but it's what exists in your mind, right? But to the point, you know, we teach people, what does it mean to be human? And, you know, you can have all these tools and resources. You may still have off days, or you may still not feel yourself sometimes, or you go through ups and downs, but what does balance mean to you? And so it was a journey for me to find out what that balance meant. And I really did put in those boundaries in place when I set up Karma. And it was like, okay, weekends are, you know, away from social media. When I am on holiday, I'm on holiday and I'm present with my husband or whoever I'm with. When I'm with family, I'm with family. And my business didn't collapse miraculously. And you know what? I felt more refreshed. I felt more present. I felt more like I'd really switched off and actually had time to really embrace quiet, rest, recuperation. And we all need that, you know. So I do really take a lot of joy in sharing with our community, I'm going on holiday next week, and you know, I'll be back in the group, you know, in a week's time or whatever, you know, and actually share that and empower others to do the same. But it definitely took time to get there. But I just think, you know, we need to find what is sacred to us in our lives and really honor that, whatever that is. And holiday time off, I believe it's important to be part of that. What do you think, Danny?
Yeah, I agree. I think it took me a little bit of time. I think when you're first starting up, you know, your life is your business at that point. You know, you still need to make money. You need to pay your bills. You need to do all of that kind of stuff. So I think that pushing, you know, maybe I answered a few too many emails. Maybe I did, you know, wrote too much or whatever. But for me, 100%, I definitely enjoy holidays, but sometimes I do, like, my most creative thoughts come from when I'm relaxing. I think that happens for most people, the way that the brain is working. So sometimes actually I'd be sitting by the pool and I'd be like, oh my God, I've got the best idea for a course or something. And I'd suddenly be like, shh, and do more in like 2 hours of sitting by the pool than I do sit, you know, 6 hours behind my desk trying to force myself to think of something clever to write. So I think I can be guilty of working on holiday, I've got to be honest, but not too much. It depends. Like if it's by the pool, 100%. If I'm running around a city somewhere, then absolutely no chance, you know, my email's off. But I take advantage of the fact that I run my own business. So I can just put my meetings, put my clients, put my time around my holiday so that I feel like, yeah, I can take this time off. And it's just about planning, really. That's a big part of it. But then I was going to say one thing about, on a bigger scale, I always like to think that, and it's a little philosophical, but I think it's really important, which is, to me anyway, in my thought process, we have one life. And I want it to be lived to the fullest. I want to work my hardest and build something great, but I also want to travel and explore and do all of the other things in life that fulfill me as well. You know, exploration and adventure is also a big part of my life, and it's as important as my job. So when I am doing that, when, you know, I'm running around a city looking, so I'm an ancient historian, so I spend my life looking at sites and museums and things. So that to me is like a part of my heart as well. So I want to enjoy it. I don't want to go and be sitting reading emails while I'm looking at some incredible, you know, artifact or whatever. So I think it's about understanding that life is more than work as well, which is really important. You know, enjoy every day. And if you're going to read a book that's not work related, bloody enjoy it, you know, really enjoy it. Don't half enjoy it because you're full of guilt. If you're going to do it properly, I think would probably be the advice I'd have.
I just want to say on that point, Danny, like you raise a really good point in that when you have time and rest and like space for your mind to really just settle. And, you know, that can absolutely be times when your biggest inspiration comes through, your biggest ideas. So that's also another reason why we need to give ourselves these breaks and these time off. But also there's no one size fits all. And we're living in a digital age where we have the flexibility and the benefit of being able to work anytime, anywhere. So again, it goes back to that original point we said about boundaries and setting what boundaries are meaningful to us. There's no one clear-cut way that you need to take the whole holiday off and not even blink or touch your email at all. It's like, I know some people that are like, I do 1 hour of emails first thing in the morning and then I'm done for the day. But I know it just for me, I just want to get it out of the way and I actually feel more relaxed for the rest of the day with my family or whatever, you know, before they've all got up. Or, you know, it just depends what works for you. And if you have a wave of inspiration, writing it down and having a little brainstorm, that can invigorate you. And I think that's part of the DNA of being an entrepreneur as well, which is quite difficult to put into words. That you love what you do so much that it can also not feel like work. So it's also a balancing work of that, you know.
It's an incredibly creative thing to be an entrepreneur, and it's generally something where you visualize big things. And I think that's kind of where a lot of the anxiety comes from as well, because you've created something, it's an idea, and you generally see the end product. You're not seeing all of the gritty day-to-day stuff that comes along, and it can be very frustrating and very anxiety inducing. So I think, yeah, enjoying that creativity and allowing yourself to have these brainwaves and, you know, open up that creative kind of space that comes from recovery is a really important thing as well.
I think I find it hard to switch off. I don't think I'm as full on, like you said, when you started out and you were constantly thinking about your business and where, you know, the next step and where, what things were going to happen. I'm not that bad, but I always have my emails on my phone. So if I get an email, I will just reply to it. So maybe I need to find more of a balance, but I don't think I'm that bad at the moment. I'm still kind of new to this role. So it's kind of like,
that's good. Keep it that way. Those words are so telling. I'm not that bad at the moment, almost implying you will get to that point at some time. Keep it that way. Make sure that you maintain it. In fact, put more and more boundaries in place, I would say. You know, make sure that you find out what works for you with regards to emails and stuff. Don't anticipate becoming overwhelmed by your work, because, you know, that's going to manifest that as well.
Definitely. But I do feel, like you were just saying, Danny, I do want to live my life. Like, I do want to go and see amazing places. Like, I'm planning a wedding, so that's taking over my life at the moment. But at the same time, then I feel a bit guilty sometimes, and I think, should my life be constantly thinking about work? But then listening to you guys today has obviously made me realise, no, you are allowed to have a life outside of your job.
I think a really good question is to ask why to things. So, for example, if you're saying, like, should I be thinking about work all the time? Why not ask, why should I be thinking about work all the time? Like, should you? Why? If you break it down, like, why would that be a good thing for you to only be thinking about work? And essentially just wearing away at your resilience and your energy and enthusiasm for your job, because it becomes more like a chore as opposed to something that you love doing. So I think leaning into the why questions is really important sometimes when you're a bit confused about what you should be doing, or should I be thinking that, and just think, well, why would that be good? Why should I be doing that? And it helps open that site. Actually, that would be ridiculous. You know, I can't spend my entire life, you know, I'm, you know, going to enjoy my wedding, and that's enjoying the process of planning a wedding as well. You know, instead of it becoming a chore and something that you have to squeeze in, like, make it an enjoyable part of your life.
And also that point about the word should in itself, like another perspective is, you know, like we end up shoulding all over ourselves, you know, a lot of the time, like, should I be doing this? Should I be doing more? Yeah. You know, and actually, like, one of the things you could think of is switching that to could, you know, so it's almost like, you know, could I do this? Yes, I could. Or could I maybe look at this another time? Or could I approach this from a different perspective? I've already done a lot today, you know, like switching almost like the little internal dialogue around it. If you say like, oh, I should be working more, I should check my emails. It's like, I could check my emails or I could work more, but what have I done today already? Or what have I been achieving already? And maybe I'll just be proud of what I've done and, you know, pick up on things tomorrow. It's such an easy pattern to fall into, isn't it?
And should also is so negative because it kind of puts you off. I talk about this in one of my workshops where you say, I should go to the gym this morning. And if you don't get up in time to go to the gym, then it's like you beat yourself up and you're probably most likely to not go at all. Whereas if I could go to the gym this morning, it's more like, I could go. And even if you only go for 30 minutes or whatever, you're more likely to go, you know, for a quick 30 minute workout rather than, you know, a 2 hour gym session, which should sounds like, you know, should is very accusatory. Whereas could is... It's like an opportunity.
It's like you're giving yourself choice, like rather than being weighed down by should.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Guys, if you're enjoying this podcast and particularly this episode, then you should definitely check out Women of Her Story. This is a podcast dedicated to celebrating women who have made or are making their mark on our society. Just what we need. You can listen to new episodes of the podcast twice a week. Tuesdays are a researched biographical episode co-hosted by Heather Ashley and Joe Ortiz, and it covers anything from Boudica the Celtic Warrior Queen to cancer researcher Dr. Jewel Plummer Cobb. Then on Fridays, the pod brings us an interview with some incredible women of today who are making massive impacts. Again, some examples include Michelin star pastry chef, the first female MBL full-time hitting coach, and everyone in between. The pod is great because it discusses everything from failure to success and has a really good laugh with it as well. Things are kept light-hearted, but at the same time it's definitely serious when it needs to be. There is something for everyone with this pod, and I know it really wants to encourage everyone to show the world what they're made of. It is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Make sure you go and check it out. I just wanted to move it on slightly because I know we've touched on it, but obviously we can't not really focus a question on lockdown. We've just been through lockdown. It must have been the hardest time on some people's mental health. Danny, I thought it was really interesting earlier how you said a lot of people will know now how what entrepreneurs are going through because it's the unknown. You don't know what's coming next, and that's exactly what lockdown provided for us and the crisis that we're currently going through. And I thought it was quite interesting that a lot of startups that I have and founders I've spoken to just seem to have coped very well. And I don't know if that's kind of like how you were saying certain people are meant to be like founders and business owners. And it's just the sort of person that they are because they'll just adapt and they'll do anything to keep their business going. They're kind of ready for that unknown. But how do you think lockdown has had an impact on people's mental health? And also, it's a massive change that they've gone through. Coming out the other side, is it going to affect them again? Because again, then we're going through another big change coming out of lockdown. Tanya, shall we start with you?
Sure. Yeah, it's a really good question. I think with the whole lockdown scenario, essentially human beings can, like, we all respond to change differently, but some people can really struggle with the idea of change, and we like to be in our comfort zone, we like things to be fluid and routine and, you know what's kind of coming. So to have suddenly gone from where we were suddenly into a lockdown scenario is quite extreme, so I think that was quite a lot to get our heads around and adapt to. But at the same time, the brain is very adaptable. And I know this is something in your area as well, Danny, that you talk about a lot too. Just how we are actually like hardwired for change and how our brain can adapt very well, whether we're aware of it or not. But, you know, there's been aspects of lockdown that's given us a little bit, you know, a lot of time to reflect, obviously, and a lot of time to perhaps embrace a bit of a slower pace of life to, you know, to really consider, you know, what's important to us. And, you know, reminds us, of course, this whole situation with COVID-19 reminds us how important health is, you know, and how that is a priority. But, you know, it's also given us a bit more flexibility. And for people who particularly weren't working from home much before, you've now got a bit more of that lifestyle around your work. Not lifestyle as in being able to go out and about and doing all these things, but actually enjoying your home for some people, or, you know, enjoying doing things that you maybe didn't give yourself enough time to do before, like with cooking or gardening, and, you know, hearing a lot of stories like that, and just actually being a little bit more mindful in day-to-day life. On the flip side, of course, there's been a lot of people that have really struggled with this and perhaps feel quite constricted or restricted in where they live, or they don't have a garden, or they struggle to get out as much as they'd want, and, you know, perhaps just have other issues in their home life. So I think the core for me in your question is that it depends on the individual, you know, and circumstances going on in their life. And sometimes a sudden situation like going into an extreme like lockdown can really bring to the surface, you know, if there are sort of like issues that somebody would have been dealing with, but also on a fundamental level of, like, you know, disconnection, like the fact that we couldn't really see people unless we were living with them, we couldn't really touch or hug and, you know, feel others that are close to us in our life. And, you know, that human connection is incredibly important to our well-being, and it's fundamental to who we are. So I think it's going to be interesting coming out of this, that there'll be aspects of the lockdown experience where perhaps the pace of life, perhaps that more mindful living, perhaps, you know, having a bit more flexibility around running your business. People will want to take little pieces of that into whatever the next phase will be. I don't think that we're going to want to go back completely to normal, because, you know, but we've already gone from one extreme to another as well. And there will be parts of this that I think are going to be quite important to take forward from a, you know, sort of how we're living our days, what choices we're making, you know, what we think is important to carry forward, and create kind of a new sense of you know, what feels right for us in our days. But, you know, no doubt about it would have been a challenge on people's mental health. I know that there has been a rise generally, you know, on people's mental health, and especially from a working from home perspective. I think the ONS cited that before lockdown, there was around roughly 8 million or 8.7 million people who were working from home in the UK. And they estimated that it had gone up to around 20 million, you know, of people who were going from that to now working from home. So it's a huge jump and a huge shift for a lot of people. But, you know, I think with regards to mental health, the issue of loneliness or isolation can come up. And I think that's a fundamental to how people feel on a day-to-day basis, that disconnection from really having that human-to-human interaction. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how it develops. What do you think, Danny?
Yeah, absolutely. I think 100% obviously agree with the fact that humans are resistant to change. Absolutely. We love to lean towards status quo of life, but also we forget how incredibly adaptable we are. I want to touch on another point that you actually raised earlier, Anna, about the startups being adaptable. And 100%, I think people who obviously have startups generally, they run smaller businesses. When you're smaller, you can be more adaptable, more agile. You can react to change in environments very quickly in comparison to, you know, much larger businesses, which inherently can have a little bit, not all, but some tend to have a bit of a sluggish kind of reaction to, their reactive as opposed to proactive, especially if they've been around for a long time, legacy businesses, etc. So I think that you're absolutely right. I think that loads of startups have thrived actually during this time and have actually found a lot of creative outlet for work and business. Certainly some of my clients that I've been working with, but obviously not everybody, but some. But we were talking about obviously all of the day-to-day things that Tanya just mentioned about, you know, you're within a small space. But also I think there's a really interesting element here at play, which is generally to do with a sense of lack of control over our lives. And I think that that was a really big wake-up call for a lot of people. I personally read a lot of Stoic philosophy, and one of the key points of Stoicism is that we have really no control over anything other than our own reaction to scenarios and to life. And I live and breathe that mantra, and I believe in Stoicism, and it really is true. And I think that when you take on that mentality of, right, I can't really do anything about this scenario, but I can make the best out of it, it really does help you then feel like you're in control. Because if you've had your liberties kind of taken away from you, you've had maybe your job taken away from you, your space, your freedom to move, maybe things that are really important to you, like working out, for example, which is incredibly important for our mental health and physical health, seeing our family and friends, all taken away from us. We feel completely out of control. However, by leaning into that and thinking about it and actually thinking, do you know what? I can make the best out of this scenario. It's not what I want. I don't want it to be like this, but I can choose how I respond. And understanding how much control, once again, we have over our minds and our behaviours. And by knowing that, we take back the control. And that's kind of the topic that I've and how I've been approaching this whole scenario with lots of my clients and lots of my work is by understanding that we can control ourselves when actually we control very little else around us. And I think it's just a big wake up call that generally, even after COVID, you know, you might be able to go out, you'll see your family, your friends, go to the gym, go for restaurants, do whatever you want to do. But you still don't really have any control over what's going on. And I think it was just a big bloody wake up call for absolutely everyone in the world being like, we have no idea what's going to happen next, ever. Yeah. You know what they say, like we make plans and God laughs at us. It's very much that scenario. And I think that it's a really good wake up call. And I've seen a lot of people really thrive and actually learn a lot about themselves during this time, which can be quite scary. As Nisha said, you know, staring into the abyss. And that's what we've had to do. We've had to look at ourselves in our most vulnerable state over the last few months. And it can be pretty scary, you know. It's not a nice, pleasant thing to do. But there's so much to be learned. And remember when I was saying earlier, instead of being fearful, being curious and actually wanting to learn more stops things from being quite as scary. So, yeah, I think that that's probably the thing that I've taken the most from this and a really good lesson for everybody to learn, I think.
It's so true, Danny, what you're saying. And also just the fact that, you know, businesses are going to be transformed after this. And it's just been so interesting to see because, you know, we work with a lot of companies who are office based and, you know, we're very much in the mindset of, you know, well, you know, this is where we work and this is how we work. We might do a bit of working from home if we have to, but the culture was really being in the office. And then to have to suddenly work from home, it's really made them like helped them to open their eyes to the fact of what's possible and what they can actually get done. And a lot of people, you know, have found benefits from that, especially if they have families and things like that, where they find that more flexibility around their work at home. But at the same time, you know, like Danny was saying, people who had lost their jobs, like been made redundant, or people who have gone through furlough, it's, you know, everyone's going through something completely different. So it's quite difficult to look at the overall picture and say, well, you know, this is what's going to come out of it. But obviously we can predict based on what we've seen. But I was going for a walk the other day with my husband and we came across this really sweet notice board in this little community area near where we live. And they every now and then we've noticed they update with loads of pictures and like, you know, positive images and sayings for their community and thanking the NHS and things like that. And one thing that really struck me, that there was this little message a few days ago that said something like, you know, you don't have to thrive. It's okay just to survive during this time. And I thought that that was really poignant as well. For some people, like Danny said, they will still be thriving through this. Businesses might be booming even, and especially if they're digital based, they might have seen a spike in sales in their community, etc. And some people might have adapted really well to working from home. Others might have lost their jobs. They might have been made redundant. They might have, you know, for example, people in the film and TV industry have just had, and music, you know, all the live performances, live events have just been completely stripped, any filming projects. So there's certain industries where it's just completely flipped things over on its head. So I think wherever you are, if you're not thriving, it's okay to just survive this, because this is a completely unique time in our history. But the key thing is just keeping that community spirit is so, so important. Like, we are naturally social in our nature as human beings, and we need other people to feed that social connection. So, you know, keeping in touch with people who you love, you know, having a support network, whether it's through video call or phone call or seeing at social distance, you know, but just keeping in touch with people and not getting into a space where you feel completely alone, because like Danny said, it's our reactions to things that we can control.
Absolutely. And also isolation and a sense of isolation is very typical when we're going through the trauma or pain or any kind of adverse reaction to things. We think we're the only ones, when actually when you reach out, you find that, you know, the thing about what's been going on with COVID and isolation, remote working, etc., is that it's been global. You know, you're not isolated. We're all in it together. And I think that remembering that is a really good way of relieving any kind of anxieties around it, just instantly by knowing you're not alone. And that's really important.
Do you think people can come out of, you know, lockdown and this crisis as we're starting to emerge, you know, and come out the other side with a better understanding of their mental health. And in some ways, I don't want to say coronavirus was positive, but like it has helped some people going through this time to, you know, realize things about themselves and maybe make changes that have helped them, their mental well-being and their physical well-being.
Absolutely. I think the slowdown pace of life will really have helped a lot of people. I mean, I know for myself, I've absolutely loved feeling like I live in a Jane Austen novel at the moment. You know, going for long walks, cooking food from scratch, sitting, sewing, reading books. I've been having a great time, and it's incredible. I've started to think to myself, so I used to, quite a social butterfly, always think, why was I out so much all the time? Why did I need that? I'm a therapist. I'm in therapy. I'm a coach. I've got a coach. I've done years of therapy in order to train as a therapist as well. I'd like to think that I know myself very well. But even that pause has given me, it's like nature's way of saying, whoa, 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 let's have a real think about what's going on here, and given me almost a refresh button to press. Even, you know, people who invest a lot in their mental health and working on things, I think it's been a wake-up call for a lot of people. If you've been curious to ask the questions and work out, you know, maybe I don't need to carry on that way. I think also a lot of friendships that maybe weren't real friendships, a lot of connections with people that you think are fundamental to your life. I think a lot of people have been like, actually, do you know what? Don't need that toxicity around me. We've all, lots of people will have thrived without, you know, certain characters. I know I certainly have had a bit of a, oh, not sure about whether I need to go back to that particular social circle or whatever anymore. I don't know about you guys, whether you felt that way, but it's kind of been an interesting whole restart button as an adult to start to, you know, giving you that opportunity that I don't think we would have had. We'd have run on that hamster wheel for the rest of our lives, I think, otherwise.
Yeah, completely. I think it does definitely bring to surface who are the people who you really connect with and keep in touch with and they're there for you. I had a lockdown birthday as well during this time.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, I actually had a great time. And it was interesting to see who really reached out, you know, and who I connected with. And I think it is all around a really important time for reflection. And like Danny was saying, you know, you kind of think to yourself, like, why was I so busy before? You know, I think we all made ourselves busy in a way without even realizing it. And you know, it's just this keeping up with this fast pace of life. I think there's a lot more awareness around mental health continuously. And the fact that everybody is online so much more at the moment has probably given, you know, more of a space and exposure to mental health as well, with all the articles, media exposure, charities doing great work, etc. So I think, yeah, I hope that people would consider their mental health more after this. That people would have reached out if they were struggling, that there's this kind of, you know, any sort of veil of shame or uncertainty around actually being vulnerable, you know, has become sort of like removed for, you know, a lot of people, and actually just how much vulnerability is really a strength.
I hope for a lot of bosses as well, which I've certainly experienced with lots of my clients, lots of, you know, top dogs sitting there with big corporations thinking, why am I investing in mental health support? Why am I doing this? I don't really want to. Here's 20p fix, you know, put in place what you need to for my organization. I think now, because everybody universally has felt some sense of isolation, stress, anxiety, whatever it might be. And I've noticed organizations saying, yeah, okay, I get it a bit more now. And yeah, we're prepared to put some more support in, which I think is one of the biggest takeaways that I've seen personally with clients and organizations I've been working with.
Yeah, that's actually so true, because we've even gained more clients during this time than pre-COVID, yeah, because I think they're waking up to the fact that it's not something that's just a nice to have, you know, yeah, it is more becoming more and more essential. If you want a thriving workforce, you have to invest in your people.
Exactly.
So, ladies, as we come towards the end, I'd like to finish on a bit of a high. So, as we're coming out of lockdown and people are preparing for more change, like you say, the workspace is changing, but we're starting to get back into life. What advice would you have for people moving forward with this next change? And also, just in general life, when thinking about yourself, your well-being and your mental health, what's that one piece of advice that you tell yourself when you're feeling low, or if you were to give someone one piece of advice, what would it be?
One piece of advice. Oh God.
Oh, you can give me as many as you want if you want to.
I think between Tanya and I, we'll be here all bloody day giving you advice if we carry on. I think the one big piece of advice is give yourself a bit of a break. You know, you are just a human. You're going through something that we've not known before. Be curious. Don't run away from what emotions you're feeling. Lean into them. Be curious. Reach out. If you've got a question, if you're not feeling great, talk to someone, whether it's a professional, a friend, a family member, a trusted colleague, whatever it is. If you're uncertain, if you're not feeling like yourself or you don't know what's going on, just talk to somebody and you will find, generally speaking, you know, there is support around you. But don't be fearful of change. You know, once we've overcome that instant fight or flight moment, we can actually think with, you know, a clear head and work out a path. You know, nothing is unsolvable. So I think that would probably be my advice.
Following on from that, so I think there's just something to be said about our own stories and how even if we're in a difficult place or we're coming out of this and it isn't easy, it's not going to be easy for a lot of people, but everything you feel is valid. That's something that my mum always used to say to me growing up, and it's always stayed with me. And in the work that I do now, it feels even more like profound than ever. Everything you feel really is valid. So like, own your story, honor your story, whatever that is for you. And just remember that everybody is going through their own story too. So you're not alone in whatever you're going through, even if it feels like that, or if it feels isolating for whatever reason. Everyone has their own struggles to different degrees as well, and everybody's going through different stories. So just think, you know, how am I honouring my own story and how can I own my story? And like Danny was saying, does that mean getting more support, getting help, reaching out? One of the things that I like to think of as well is, or something that I teach in my workshops too, is around, call it what you will, but I call it a little balance bubble, right? So it's something that you can write down, like a balance bubble or whatever you want to call it, but you draw a little bubble around it, make it creative, do it a little creative project and just write around it, you know, draw some lines and write down all the people in your life, whether it's personal, professional, people who give you emotional support, acquaintances who you just connect with really well, or, you know, good entrepreneurial buddies, like people who you just know you can go to. And that can just be a small group. It doesn't have to be a huge bunch of people.
It should be a small group, really.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's quality connections, isn't it? So who really gives you that emotional support and who can you turn to? Because sometimes in your lowest ebb, you can forget that and you can feel alone, or you feel like, oh, I'm the only one going through this. But if you have some sort of written reminder somewhere, like, what is my balance bubble, and, you know, who gives me balance and who helps me feel like I can restore my energy levels. I mean, the balance bubble can be used in many ways, like what activities also give you balance in your life, but also people, because going back to my earlier point about social connection is vital for our well-being. Remind yourself of the people who you can go to if you're not feeling at your best. Even if it's just to listen to, like, active listening is such an important skill in life, and you don't always have to have the answers. So on the flip side, if you have someone come to you who is struggling, you know, just really giving them quality listening time, you know, can be, you know, just what they need too, just to have an outlet and to express how they feel. So own your story, figure out what your balance bubble means. That would be my takeaway.
And get in contact with a coach if you need to.
Yes, definitely. We have a coach and a community right here for people to reach out to when they need to. Ladies, it's been an absolute pleasure. I could sit here and talk to you all day. I have forgotten one thing, though. Because we're called the Serial Entrepreneur Podcast, we ask everyone their favourite cereal. I normally do this at the beginning, but it might be a nice way to end after our, you know, deep conversations today. So, Danny, let's start with you. What is your favourite cereal and why?
God, I haven't had cereal for so bloody long. I used to love Lucky Charms when I was younger.
That's my favourite cereal.
They're like the elite cereal.
Yeah. And also probably the most diabetes inducing cereal as well. I think that they're basically 100% sugar. So...
pretty much. It's like a treat if you want to go down that road.
Sunday morning treat cereal. So safe to say they're your favourite as well, Tanya?
Pretty much. I mean, I just dip into them as a treat maybe, but I really love mini Bixes because they come in lots of different flavours as well. Like they're Weetabix, but the mini versions, and they have like fruit and nut, or they have banana flavour, and I like those.
You seem to have contrasted so much because Lucky Charms are like pure sugar and Weetabix is like so healthy for a breakfast. Yes. Yes.
An absolute dichotomy of cereal consumption.
What about you, Anna? What would you say yours is?
Mine's like a bit plain and boring, but Cheerios, honey flavoured Cheerios.
That's a good shout for an everyday staple cereal, I would say. Also, what about Cocoa Pops as well?
A lot of people say Cocoa Pops because then you get the chocolate milk at the end. Well, ladies, thank you so much for chatting with me today. It's been such a great conversation. Hopefully very helpful for a lot of people. And I know you guys do a lot of work to help a lot of people. So it's been amazing to have you on and chat to you. So just thank you very much.
No, thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you. Loved it. Thank you so much.
Serial Entrepreneur.